welcome along to the Daggers and Lids podcast. It is brilliant to say that we are together in person rather than on a screen like we've
remotely
been doing.
Finally, we're together and at a cricket ground, not a pub.
Absolutely. at a cricket ground, at Headingley Cricket Ground. We're both here because we've got, we're covering the Blast match later, the Clash of the Roses. Against Lancashire, which should be good. There's already a few people in the ground, actually, because they're showing the football, aren't they?
They are.
England are taking on Denmark this evening. But as ever, we are here to talk to you about all things women's cricket. And this week, we wanted to do one because there has been a lot of stuff going on, hasn't there?
I don't think we necessarily always have to get a guest. Sometimes we can just go at it. We can, because the information is there at our disposal, and then we can give our opinions. Whether people want to listen to them or not is beside the point. But we can. There has been a lot, and we text each other a lot.
We do.
We're constantly texting each other. In fact, my partner Asha turns around. I said, just bear with me. Bear with me. And she went, is it Lid? And I went, yeah, it's Lid. And she goes, oh, okay. And understands. So but there is a lot of things going on. And the whole point of the podcast, wasn't it, was to keep up to date and do what news is around there. Because what we didn't want to do is just wait for series or a franchise competition and just do them around there. There's so much going on now in the women's game, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
With news coming thick and fast, and especially in this changing environment of the women's landscape, just think it's worth us trying to bash out as much information for you guys as we possibly can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually saw on our YouTube channel as well, someone mentioned that, will we be covering other cricket outside of the UK? And absolutely we will, starting with international cricket around the world. You mentioned it on the pod last week, Daggers. There are two other series going on. Obviously, we've got the England and New Zealand series coming up very, very shortly. But
which we will be previewing.
We will be.
We have
got a guest, actually, Katie Martin. Just got a message from her today. She will be joining us. So, Marty, we're looking forward to having you on. As I say, the other two international series going on at the moment are India against South Africa. They have got a three-match ODI series which they're in the middle of. They also have a test match and then three T20s, but as it stands currently, the ODI series, the second game was completed yesterday and India have gone 2-0 up in that one. They won the first ODI match pretty convincingly, 143 runs, thanks to a Smriti Mandhana century. But the game yesterday, Daggers, I don't know if you saw it, but let me just run you through the scores because it was quite phenomenal. So India batted first. Remember, this is home series for them. They posted 325 for 3. Within that, there was another Smriti Mandhana 136 for her, which puts her equal top ODI 100 scorer for India alongside Mitali Raj.
Well said, you. I tell you what, that was nicely done. It's been practiced actually, secretly, but no. Beautifully said.
Thank you, Daggers. 7 was the magic number that Mitali Raj had reached, and Mandhana has equaled that. You would think that she will go on to surpass that with some ease and by some distance throughout her career. Harmanpreet Kaur, who scored a century as well, and actually for that century, she picked up player of the match, batted beautifully. And then in pursuit of that, South Africa got really, really close, actually. In the last over, they needed 11 runs to win. And that was all set up thanks to Marizane Kapp, who earlier got a century, and Laura Woolvart, who was in at the end in the last over. They needed 11 runs. Pooja Vashrika bowled the last over. The first ball was a full toss to Laura Woolvart, which on any other ball she would have whacked into the stand. She whacked it out for a single and then she got stranded and wickets fell. It came down to the last ball. They needed 6 to win and they just couldn't do it. So I'm no doubt, Daggers, that you had an eye on that game.
I did have an eye on it, and I mean there are records that have been smashed left, right and centre, and would have been had South Africa completed the victory. A couple of things stemming from that. Bengaluru must have been going nuts, absolutely nuts. Smriti Mandhana, an RCB player, going scoring a big 100. They probably, and I didn't see all of the game, so I can't be sure. However, they probably gave Harmon Precourt the player of the match because Smriti won it in the first game, two in a row, and just sharing it out a little bit. Just to say that Harmon Preet century, 103 off, what was it, 88 balls, 9 falls, 3 sixes. That's when she's in the mood. Yeah. Obviously, it was probably a very, very good surface, as shown by the scores. But it matters not. The product was there. When you're it reminds me of a bit like that 4:30 game between Australia and South Africa in the men's competition. We were all blown away by it at that time. And this could be a kind of one of those moments for the women's game that these A scores are more than achievable, but B, they're being able to be chased down. In the first game where Indy got 260 odd, South Africa became nowhere near. Now, you know, two games in, they've got maybe used to the conditions a little bit more and a little bit more confidence going through them. You know, that belief starts to run through the system. Now, of course, it's the two big guns who have got the rods in Laura Wolfhart and Marizanne Kapp. But I just think that the game itself, and I was following it on social media. And this, you know, I think it will have huge ramifications, not just about cricket in India, but also in South Africa and around international series. That, you know what, the big three, you're able to get at them a little bit. If you know, they're not completely infallible, and I'm sure there were a couple of worried Indian cricketers. They at half time, what do you reckon? Do you reckon they thought they possibly won it?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, I watched that game, and I saw they were in the Indian side as they went out to take the field. You could see they were very relaxed, and as you would be if you'd scored 300 runs, and you think, okay, well, we'll just need to take the wickets now. But that shifted massively. There were then a few worried faces, and they were trying to make things happen. And you mentioned Marizanne Kapp, but I think one thing for South Africa is she's not bowling at the moment. And I think the reason for that, just having read in between the lines, is she's got a little bit of a back niggle, I think. And they're also trying to manage her workload. So whether she'll take up a more prominent role in the T20s or they're saving her for that test match, I'm not too sure.
The other aspect is I think that they'll possibly even be thinking longer term than that, because she is such a vital cog in that South African side, especially with the ball and especially in the power plays in T20 cricket with Bangladesh coming up. And it isn't far away. October sounds like it's a long time. It's really not. So if there's any, for a player of her magnitude within South Africa, you wrap her in cotton wool, you don't do anything you don't necessarily have to do. But you know, if she's still able to bat, she still is one of the best batters within that South African side. So she commands a place either with bat or ball.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly as well, another record, there seem to be so many, other than the fact that it was the first time four ODI hundreds had been scored in the first game. Marizanne Kapp has actually joined only two other players to reach the milestone of 3,000 runs in ODIs and 150 wickets in ODIs. So she joins Stefani Taylor of the West Indies and Elise Perry of Australia. So
it's not pretty exalted company, isn't it? It really is. But
so,
one just off, slightly off topic, but within that series, I was reading up that Harmon Precourt was talking ahead of the series as well. This 3 1-day internationals, the test match, and 3 T20s, which India have seemed to get into a rhythm of now at the moment. Granted, when England went out there in December, there was no one-day internationals, but they played a test in the 3 T20s. Australia came straight after that, and it was a multi-format series. But there's no points. There's no points in this, as we see in the women's Ashes, for the fourth of the test and two points for every other victory. And she was saying, I'd like that. I'm with her on this. I don't know if you are or not, but I think if you have all of those formats covered, I think it's something that works in the women's game. It keeps, you know, spectators interested for longer in the series. It can have a little bit more riding on it. And it doesn't mean that you cannot play for world championship points at the same time, but I think it just gives it a little bit more of a boost.
Yeah, I completely agree. It'd be interesting to see if other people agree on that as well.
Let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on now. So Sri Lanka, I mentioned, are playing the West Indies. Sri Lanka have got that series at home, and they are currently 2-0 up in the ODI series. They've got 3 ODIs and 3 T20s. Sri Lanka won the first ODI by 6 wickets. They were chasing 196, and they chased it down in the 35th over. order, the Sri Lankan top order, pretty much all of them actually chipping in with some runs, which was good to see.
Yep.
And then in the most recent ODI, West Indies had a bit of a shocker. They were bowled out for 92. Kavisha Dilhari, the spinner that we saw over in England last
year.
She bowled brilliantly, 4 for 20 for her. And then in the chase, obviously a small total, but Vishmi Gunaratne chased, helped with the bulk of that. She got half century. I suppose the one thing from that, Doug, is a bit more depth on show from Sri Lanka.
Exactly what I was thinking. I was looking at those scorecards and I've not seen any of the games. I've seen a minuscule of it on social media. But when we previewed this series, and it wasn't a big preview either, it was just mentioning what was going on, but we both probably had in our mind that it's Hayley Matthews versus Jamari Attapati, and whoever does the best out of those two will probably, because they are so prominent within their sides, the amount of games that the West Indies win or Sri Lanka win and player of the match is one of those two, it's alarming. I'd like to actually see the statistics on that. What was great about this from a Sri Lankan perspective was Vishmi Gunaratne, who we saw the Women's T20 World Cup just a couple of years ago, now starting to fill that role at the top of the order. And if someone like Jamari can have that pressure taken off her just a little bit with help elsewhere, I think that can only be a good thing. So that was the thing that really stuck out to me. West Indies don't look good. I'm afraid they don't. And if Hayley Matthews doesn't do anything with the bat, yes, Stefani Taylor, Shemaine Campbell. But these are players who have been around for quite some time and don't have stellar records. The other thing that slightly surprised me, another player that we saw in the T20 Under-19 World Cup was Zaida James. Left-arm spinner. A very, very promising left-arm spinner as well for the West Indies. Didn't bowl in the first game. And in the second game, 4 overs, 1 for 12. And she's batting down at what? She's batting down at 8. In fact, 9 she's batting. So, I'd be tempted to give a youngster like that a little bit more on Sri Lankan surfaces.
I think
that was something that just stuck out to me, but really good results for Sri Lanka.
Yeah, really good. Absolutely. And I think that's crucial for them. Obviously, I know this is a different format of the game. There is a T20 World Cup around the corner, but just those sort of performances give you a huge amount of confidence, don't they?
Hugely.
Right, moving on. So we stay international
type of news. We're churning through it here, aren't we? We're churning through it.
Absolutely. So New Zealand, so obviously they're going to be over, or they are over actually at the moment. I think they're training in Leicester, but they have recently announced
what a beautiful place to train.
Contracts. What's that, Leicester?
Leicester. Oh, yeah, why would you want to go anywhere else?
Where were you? Were you Market Harbour?
Market Harbour. You see, you're North Leicester. No, says Miss Quorn here. Up in North Leicestershire, I mean both North and South, very, very nice indeed.
Well, you're in Paddens these days, aren't you?
No, I am now in Bishop Stortford, so I'm on the Essex border. So I'm going to get myself a pair of white stilettos and do my veneers on my teeth. That's a poor stereotype from me, I do apologise. They're in Leicester.
Yes, they are. I was actually wondering how we ended up having that conversation then. But anyway, so New Zealand have announced their recent contracts. So they've announced 17 player contracts for the 2024-25 period. Lots of familiar names, as you would expect, but I guess the two big ones is a recall for the batter Laura Down, who is back from maternity leave from the birth of her first child, and then first contract for Otago wicketkeeper batter Polly Inglis, who off the back of a strong domestic performance, and also she played against England A, and I think she did pretty well earlier on in the year. So good to see her given that first contract. I actually worked with her a bit. She came over to England and did some work with my coaching company, Cricket Girls, and she was one of our coaches, and she was brilliant. She was based in London, she worked at a school, she trained, and you could see that she really had that sort of desire to kick on. She was also a good hockey player, so I was really pleased when I saw that name. For New Zealand, obviously, they're sort of in a position where they need to get back into the top flight, don't they, in terms of competing against the likes of England, Australia and...
Very much so. Yeah. And there's again, really looking forward to seeing what New Zealand have to offer when they come for the 5 T20s and 3 one-day internationals. Well, they already are here, obviously. But seen what they've got to offer. They're an aging side, you know, Susie Bates, Sophie Devine, not getting any younger. That not to say that they are not still quality, because they are. But, you know, that they need to find players of that kind of ilk to try and replace. Mealy Kerr, of course, we know the quality that she possesses. I feel that she performs better in franchise tournaments than she does in international matches. I've always left, and this is no slight on her, but I've never seen her win a game for New Zealand, like on her own. I say games that I've been covering. I know she has done. But I think you can expect a little bit more from Amelia Kerr. You know, if you are one of the top all-rounders in the world, what is she, second in the world in the all-rounder?
Yeah, she's absolutely up there.
You know, and she puts in the odd decent performance here, but I really want to see more from her. I think the time is now. She's got a huge amount of experience behind her to really take that mantle and really sort of stand up and say, do you know what? I'm going to win these games for you. I'm going to get that 70-odd out. I'm going to get you the vital wicket that can change it for New Zealand. So still a high-class player, but I think it's time for her to step out of the shadow of the Bateses and the Devines. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that, because I've obviously seen her a bit more up close with Mumbai Indian. So it's I guess what you're saying is she, and for Mumbai Indian, she has always performed brilliantly with ball and bat more recently in the most recent WPL. She's actually moving to Sydney Sixers in the Big Bash, which was part of our news. So she's moving from Brisbane Heat, which is where she's been for 5 years. She's just signed a 3-year deal for Sydney Sixers, which is a massive gift for them. I think you could probably suggest it's to do with Charlotte Edwards being head coach, obviously the Mumbai Indians link. I think her sister Jess played there, and Susie Bates as well. So they've obviously said good things about the Sixers. So, yeah, I mean, when I think of Mealy Kerr, I do think of her as a match winner. And as you say about the international stuff, I'd be interested to explore that point a bit more, I guess, and see sort of the impact that she's been able to have.
And I'll be really intrigued to see what she provides New Zealand in these series against, you know, arguably one of the strongest nations in the world. So, so you know, almost I'm desperate for Mealy Kerr to show us what she's got, what she really has got, because we know what the potential has been. Thought she was disappointed with the ball in the WPL this year. Wasn't quite herself. But, you know, there is undoubted quality. But as you say, you know her well. She's moved from Brisbane Heat. It's amazing how we've actually just slightly got fed into another. We've segued beautifully there. It's almost like we've put it together. But one aspect of that deal that she signed with the Sydney Sixers, I think she won Player of the Year for the Brisbane Heat for three out of the years that she'd been there. So they'll be a bit sore that she's leaving. I think she's got family in Sydney as well wants to be around. I totally get that. When you're spending 6 to 8 weeks, probably longer actually in the WBBL, away from home, having a base where you've got people who are close to you, and you can feel a little bit more comfortable. Yeah. But the other sort of bit of news I was going to ask you about was this 3-year contract. Now, it seems like the WBBL you're allowed one player to sign, overseas player, on a long-term deal. I think that is and that's what they've taken advantage of. So they've locked her up. Rather than going through the overseas player draft, they've locked one player up. And that's an intriguing theory. Actually, I'm just wondering about that in other franchise leagues where you're allowed just the one to make sure, but say for argument's sake in the 100, as we have here, you know, if you want to retain your overseas players, you can do, just adds a little bit more jeopardy if you don't necessarily have the rights to all three of your overseas. Yeah.
And I suppose the other thing on that is, as a side, if you're looking, if you've got that opportunity to sign a player for 3 years, you might also be thinking about your player longevity. So some of the best players in the world at the moment, let's say Annalise Perry, for example, she is absolutely the best in the world at the moment, but will she be the best in the world in 3 years' time? So maybe actually Mealy Kerr is a really good signing, because she's 23 years old, she's a spinner, she's not a fast bowler, and she's an amazing batter. So time will tell, but
I think that's a really good point. Actually, you know, over a 23 to 26 year old span, as opposed to maybe a 32 year old to 35 year old, I think you're 100% right. And that's some canny thinking. So, yeah. And you could argue that sides will be looking at that sort of age group to potentially sign and lock those up. And then, if that 35 year old is still playing at the level of, you know, of the quality that she possesses, then you can sign her in the draft or draft her or whatever. Yeah. But
1 year deal. Or
absolutely. Yeah. But to lock in a talent for 3 years, Sixers will be,
be very
rubbing their hands.
Right, staying with the WBBL, just a little bit of news. Actually, Brisbane Heat, so Ashley Nofke, who was their head coach for a number of years, actually, he is leaving. So he's taken up a role at Otago men's side in New Zealand. And that means he's also having to step down his in his role as an assistant coach for the UP Warriors. Mark Sorrell, who's been in and around the Queensland and Brisbane Heat setup, is going to take over as head coach. So that's just a bit of a side note, bit of news.
Yeah, absolutely. Good guy. Good guy, Ashley Nofke, and a really well-regarded coach. And we actually saw him. We were staying in the same hotel when covering the WPL. So in whichever hotel we were staying in Bangalore, which names escapes me, but the UP Warriors.
Very nice one.
Oh, it was fine.
Did you have a seafood restaurant in your hotel or a sushi restaurant?
Oh, no, that was Mumbai. That was Mumbai. That was very nice. Well played. No, it was, they stayed in the same place as we did. So you got to see all the girls and the coaches, John Lewis and Lissy Healy and Sophie Eccleston, you know, powering in the gym, as I was in the gym as well.
Cross trainer.
It's
your go-to, isn't it?
It is, totally is. Apart from when I lose rhythm and fall off, and on the weights as well, Sophie Eccleston was working really, really hard in the gym, which was great to see. But we saw Ashley Nofke quite a lot in and around, had some good chats with him, and, you know, really good guy. And I can understand why he's as well regarded, and we sure wish him the best of luck in his new role at the Otago Vaults.
Right. That is sort of our round the world trip.
Well, I can go a little further.
Are you
going to
do the USA?
Well, we're just going to mention this. It came out on the BBC Sport website. And it just, I was going to say my eyes pricked up, but that's ears. But I read it. So whatever the equivalent is for eyes pricking up, eyes lit up.
Oh, yeah, open them.
I was reading. So goodness me, unless I was reading through one eye. Anyway, this is disintegrating here, and it's because we're excited and the sun's out and England are playing later. BBC Sport website is reporting, or just saying, that there is talk and rumours of another women's T20 franchise potentially starting in the United States. Now, the BBC Sport website says that preliminary talks have taken place involving stakeholders in the US over its feasibility. So this is embryonic stages at the moment. It has the MLC, the men's T20 competition, which started a year ago. It's going to be happening again this summer. And it says discussions are said to be at a very early stage and no specific time frame has yet to be established. Having said that, no smoke without fire.
Oh, absolutely.
In a lot of these things. And with cricket being involved in the Olympics in 2028 in Los Angeles, is the sort of wind shifting that way, do you feel?
I mean, you would, as you say, there's no smoke without fire. And I think you would hope, obviously, with the World Cup running at the moment, and I suppose with the appetite that they've seen, I know the crowds haven't always been great, but there's clearly something there. And with the existing Major League Cricket tournament, you would think that the natural progression, as we've seen with all the big leagues, like the WPL, obviously the 100, the Big Bash as well, the natural progression surely is to have a women's tournament alongside it. So I'm really hopeful. And as you say, the 2028 Olympics is in LA. And I think that would mean that the USA national side are likely to qualify for that as well.
I think they already will be. Yeah. And this is the other thing. The United States and how they've done in the men's T20 world has got whetted the appetite. And any kind of USA success is got to be good for the game in that direction. Also, the Women's Under-19 World Cup had a United States women's side in there as well. So, again, this is just rumours at the moment, but something worth keeping an eye on, I reckon.
Yeah, I completely agree. We have to keep watching that space. Right, we're going to come back down to, or come back home to England.
Yes, indeed.
See what's going on here. So we've already spoken about the New Zealand squads being announced.
Yep.
But the England squads, ODI, and actually the T20 squads, I was on my way up today, and they've been announced. And I'd be interested to get your thoughts, Staggers. So for those of you who don't know, the squads are pretty much the same as they were against Pakistan. The only change is that Safir Dunkley has been recalled back up to both squads. That's off the back of obviously scoring lots of runs at domestic level. Interesting quote from John Lewis. He said, from what I can see, she has tempered her aggression a little, which I'd be interested to get your thoughts on. But the weight of runs has earned her place back, which you would think is actually that's the right way you want it.
Yeah, 100%. She's earned her place back by scoring a stack of runs in domestic cricket. I think that is what you actually, you know, I know there is in the men's game, there's a slight change. They want to see the way you play and the strike rates and all of this sort of stuff to get selected for an England side. But I still think in the women's game, it is very much because it's 50 over and 20 over cricket in the domestic structure. You know, I think good form in those competitions should earn the recall. And that is exactly what she's shown. I will temper that, though, a little bit, if you'll allow me, is that what I want to see from Safir Dunkley, and rather than get my opinions, I'd rather hear yours as former international batter. I want to see that technique slightly changed, because she was found out playing across the line to, especially to left arm spinners and leg spinners, the ball moving away from the bat, just trying to hit in one area, which was basically long off to deep backward square. That was her scoring zone, where all of the rest of them, because of that closed face that she has, it really took out a lot, unless it was really short and she could cut it. So I would hope that she has worked on her game and her technique to an extent where she's reopened the offside. Because I think when she was put it to the top of the order and they wanted her to play aggressively, and she did, and she did it with a certain amount of success. But in the early part, then you get found out a little bit by good bowlers and good tactical teams. So I for me, I'd like to see that change. I think she's earned her recall.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
And even though the standard of bowling that she'll be facing in the Charlotte Edwards and the Rachel Hayhoe Flint is good, it is good, and it is a test. It's not the test of international cricket.
Yeah.
So I'll be... What do you want to see from Sophia Dunkley?
That's why I was just reading the quote from Jonathan Lewis. The thing that he seemed happier about was the aggression part, that she's tempered that a bit. And that's great, obviously, in 50 over cricket in particular. But yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think what I want to see is, has she got a more robust technique now? And I know Sophia Dunkley is such a hard worker.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
She would have been absolutely gutted to have missed out on that Pakistan series. So I'm really hopeful that she's worked hard on her technique as well.
From your career, do you remember a time, I mean, not, I can't think off the top of my head, but when you burst onto the scene in the way that Safir Dunkley did, had a great test match debut against India down in Bristol, and then scored runs pretty consistently in that summer, and that was, she was the name, she was the poster child for that particular year or the following year, and then when you don't have the success, does that sense of loss almost, when you're taken out of an England side and go back to the grind of domestic cricket, does that just make the third, do you think that thirst will be so high for Safir Dunkley in getting her back to where she is now?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of how you come back from those sort of setbacks, I think, is sometimes dictated by where you are in your career as well. So obviously Safir Dunkley is still young, and so she, that hunger will still be there. And I think I can relate to that, because I had that in my early 20s, where I got dropped from the, not just the starting 11, but also the squad. And I was like, well, I'm still young, I need to get back into the side and fight for it. And then the other time it happened was when I was at the back end of my career, and I thought, oh gosh, I've done this a few times now. And then I don't know if you've had this the same, but you run out of steam sometimes. But I think For Sophia Dunkley, I think she is absolutely in the right point in her career to say, I'm coming back into this England side and I'm going to stay here for a lot longer as well. So fingers crossed.
Absolutely. And the good thing for her is as well, is that competition that there is now.
Yeah.
That is slightly different than it was probably three or 4 years ago. So, you know, that's going to keep, you know, keep you motivated to perform well and work on your game that little bit more. So,
And the other, yeah, absolutely. The other things worth noting, Freya Kemp is available as an all-rounder, which is great to hear and what we want to see. And then that Siva Brunt, or probably on the opposite, I think she's going to be managed with her bowling. I think she's got a bit of a knee niggle and workload.
She's similar as we were talking about with Marizanne Kapp earlier on today. With someone like that, Siva Brunt, they are different. Those players are different. And they will say, oh, they're just part of the team. And they're just, no. I'm sorry, when you are such a huge part of whether a side potentially wins or gets defeated, I think you have to treat those players just a little bit differently.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that sort of links into what we were talking about, the domestic cricket as well, doesn't it? How much some players have been playing. Right, should we move on to
still not enough sometimes, in my opinion, but that's just me because I'm grumpy.
There's many ways to skin a cat, isn't there, when it comes to learning the art of playing cricket. Right, Charlotte Edwards Cup. Anything else to chip in with?
I'm just trying to think. I'm sure there was one other thing that we talked about. But we talked about a lot.
If it comes back, we'll just let us know and we'll go off piece.
We'll just have to go through an amazing amount of text messages that we've sent each other. All our paper is flapping around on this balcony that we're here.
Readers here.
Yeah, I know. It's good, isn't it?
Right, Charlotte Edwards Cup.
Yes, update. Let's do that.
So I thought rather than going through all of the games that has just happened, we need to look ahead because there are two semi-finals and a final coming up. And the placement of those sides has all been organised and sorted. So let's start with actually the semi-finals and what that's going to look like. You're going to be there, Dad, because
I am.
22nd of June, which is the month
Saturday.
We're in, Saturday at Derby. And just to flag up to people, there is a chance of getting an adult early bird ticket for £10 instead of £12.50. £2.50 could get you 99 ice cream, couldn't it, with a flake?
How much it is? No.
Well, I don't know, but maybe two if you're lucky.
Yeah. Or at least a double scoop.
double scoop.
Strawberry sauce, nuts.
Or a witch's hat. I was talking about a witch's hat the other day.
What's a witch's hat?
It was something...
Isn't that a cone in Australia?
No, it's a...
traffic cone, I mean.
It's an ice cream, which I think is like a cone, then Mr. Whippy, and then I think it's got like some sort of ice lolly on top.
What?
Don't quote me on that.
That maybe sounds...
I had that in a dream. I'm not too sure what's happened there.
Heathens, let me tell you.
Right, should we talk about
that? I'll tell you what, though, just quickly. That £10 ticket, that's three games of cricket you're going to watch. And it's now two semi-finals and a final as opposed to an eliminator and a final. So you're getting pretty serious value.
With the possibility of England players playing as well. I think they meet up this weekend, but you would imagine some of them might be keen to play. So the first game, from what I gather, is the Blaze v the Central Sparks at 11 a.m. and then the South East Stars against the Southern Vipers at 2:30. And that those two games are actually a rerun of what happened in the final round. So in the Blaze v the Central Sparks, it's interesting because it'd be interesting to see how much this plays a role going into those games.
Yep.
The Blaze chased down 138 in the 20th over, thanks to a brilliant 89 not out of 63 balls by Marie Kelly. I don't know if you followed that game, Daggers, but it looked like Marie Kelly batted well. She's been pretty handy, hasn't she?
Do you know what? It was also one of the aspects of her playing here for the Northern Superchargers at the top of the order.
Yeah, she got that opportunity.
And she can give it a biff, you know. And I'm really interested in seeing her development and how she comes on. But, you know, 89 not out of 63 balls. So what I like is the fact that that is now seen as her role to get them off to a flyer. And if it works, I'm sure she would like a little bit more consistency. You can barely tell there's a plane going into Leeds Bradford Airport, I am sure, on our microphone. I hope all of this comes out, by the way. But yeah, very, very good player, and looking forward to seeing her in the summer. Just on that, I was really pleased that Davina Perrin's had a quietly decent season, you know. And she got runs in, I think, the very first game in the Charlotte Edwards Cup. And I know we are both huge fans of her.
Yeah.
And she was only just drafted. She was drafted last for the 100 this year. And I was like, whoa, I don't understand this. Why? She almost missed out on a draft place. But again, there's another player who I'm very keen to see. But no.
Still young as well, isn't she?
Very, very, very young. I think she's still eligible for the 19s, if memory serves. But don't quote me. Don't write in on that. Write in about anything else you want and complain by all means, but not on that. So, yeah, Blaze beating Central Sparks by 5 wickets.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing those two go head-to-head in the semi-final. Yes. I think that could be tasty. And then, if we get a rerun of this last game, we're going to have a fairly lengthy break in between because the Vipers overcame the Southeast Stars by 113 runs in a T20 game. Vipers won 79 for 5. Southeast Stars rolled for 66, which was not the worst score of the weekend. That award goes to the Lancashire Thunder, who were bowled out, I think, for 61, was it? Were they bowled out? 61. They were bowled out for 61 in 14 overs. Rachel Slater, left-arm seamer for the Northern Diamonds, getting wickets. Anyway, Southeast Stars, 66 all out in response to the Southern Vipers, 179 for 5. I don't think we're going to see a similar type of game at the semi, are we?
No, I don't think we are. I think, actually, sometimes when you go into a semi-finals day or a finals day, it's actually not a bad thing to just have a bit of a beating because it just keeps you on your toes. Yeah, you don't get that complacency, do you? The one thing, actually, and I don't know if you saw this, Daggers, but that game was down at Hove, and watching the game, we've worked down there, obviously, haven't we? And it is such a good place to watch cricket. But just a shout out to the Sussex Cricket Foundation and actually Charlotte Burton, who runs all of the women and girls cricket down there. They got over 3,000 school children into the stadium.
Wicked.
To watch that game. You can see it all on social media, but it just looked like an amazing day out. There were boys, girls, obviously loads of teachers. I think it's because it's part of National Cricket Week, but I just thought that was worth mentioning because there's so many people doing really good things down there. It's nice to see it link in with that game as well.
That's lovely. And it would have made a great, and that's what the game should be. Congratulations to Charlotte and everyone down at Sussex.
Right, moving on.
Yes.
We are going to go into now just a quick summary of the leading runs, run scorers and wicket takers as it stands.
Yeah.
Have you got the runs there?
I've got the runs. I have. And what a season it is for Catherine Bryce, 372. Mm. I mean, not only was she prominent in the WPL for a very poor Gujarat Giants side, but she had some notable performances there as an associate player.
Yes.
Catherine Bryce, obviously Scotland captain, and leading into her leading Scotland to qualification for the T20 World Cup in October. 372 runs for the Blaze this year, averaging 41, striking at 120 almost. And that is, she is a serious player anyway, but I think her confidence levels of being actually selected in the W, I think that's done her. Some players can be overawed by it and some blossom from that pressure. We saw it last year for the Manchester Originals. I think she was with the Originals. Yes, she was. And I just think the more that she is playing, the better she is getting.
Yeah, and I suppose that it's the players around her as well when you are out in places like the WPL.
Well, she's learning.
Yes, yeah. And she's a competitor as well. Her and Sarah Bryce are hugely competitive cricketers.
But only two players getting into the 300 runs stakes. The other one right here at Headingley, Holly Armitage from the Northern Diamonds. Just mentioned about just a couple that just stuck out to me, though. Mm-hmm. Davina Perrin. Nice when I get things right from time to time. 219 runs, 213 runs. So as soon as I got something right, I got it wrong. 213 runs, best of 79, striking at 130. And those are the things I look at. It's all very well saying about runs scored. I want to see what players are striking at. And Davina Perrin is up there. In fact, on the page that I have right now, she's almost 10 ahead, apart from Maya Bouchier, 145. Bush, the mighty Bush, played four games with that 93 that she scored in the last match against the Southeast Stars. There's not many who are striking. Bess Heath striking at 130, Marie Kelly 130, AJ Wellington at 153, but Perrin is up there.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think, you know,
yeah,
management will start to take note of.
Yeah, how people are scoring their runs, isn't
absolutely
it?
Isn't it interesting that I've gone through the runs? Yeah. Now I'm going to say, what about wickets?
Wickets. Well, the wickets is
we're flip-flopping here.
Yeah, we're really freestyling. The wickets is interesting, actually, because one, two, three, four, five of the top six wicket takers are all spinners. The only seamer who's in there in terms of leading wicket takers is Em Arlott, who's got 14 wickets. Really pleased to see Kirsty Gordon, top of the pile, 19 wickets for her for the Blaze. And then the two other spinners, well, three other spinners, four other spinners. Erin Burns with 16 for the Northern Diamonds, the Aussie international. Charlie Knott, another overseas import from Australia, 16. Katie Levick has got 14. And then one name for me, Tilly Courteen Coleman, who I've seen as a youngster at Kent come through the pathway. She's still only 16.
16.
And I know you would get excited about her. The talent that she's got. She's tall. She's a left arm spinner and she has got good control. She's an athlete and she can give the ball a whack as well.
TCC from here on in, Tilly Courteen Coleman. And also one thing I didn't mention on the last podcast was her four wickets and four balls in the Charlotte Edwards Cup in that 5-for-19 that she took. So again, keep an eye out, but we're going to, because Tilly Courteen Coleman is quite a mouthful.
It's a bit like Alice Davidson Richards. We've only just got used to that, haven't
it
we?
It is, and it really does give the mouth a workout. So it's a bit when we call Tom Cola Cadmore, which is a lot easier, but it's TKC. Yeah. TCC. Tilly Courteen Coleman. Yes, absolutely. But looking forward to the finals. It's been another good season in the Charlotte Edwards Cup. Yeah. I think there are still sides. What is slightly disappointing, I will say, is that it's kind of the same. It's the same teams that are pretty much involved in the semi-finals. I think last year was the Vipers, the Blaze, and I can't remember who the other semi-finalists were off the top of my head. That said, I don't think it was a Western Storm. I don't think it was a Sunrise, and I don't think it was... Was it the Lancashire Thunder?
No, I honestly can't remember, Daggers.
It might have been the Lancashire Thunder, actually. But memory serves is not necessarily a good thing. But it is the same sides. I want to see batters at the Lancashire Thunder. I want to see the Sunrisers, you know, not be bottom of the table. They've had a better Rachel Hayhoe Flynn this year. But, you know, winning two games from 10.
Yeah.
Want to see a bit of an improvement there.
Yeah, and I mean, that might be... It would be interesting to see what players are top of the list when it comes to recruitment of the new tier one status, because you would think that performances in the recent competitions will count for a lot, won't it? Where are we going to go to next?
Do you know what? That was the thing I was trying to remember a little bit earlier. I've got the point back. And you were saying, oh, is there any more news around? And stuff like that. I thought, yeah, I'm sure there is some more news around. But what is the news? And it was that.
The new players.
The signings. New player signings.
Go on then. Do you want to take us through it or do you want me to?
I'll let you
I've
do
got
it.
Them here. Well, I mean, the newest one was sent. You sent it to me, Daggers, didn't you? You emailed it to me. Interesting. Nottinghamshire Blaze seems to be what they're going with.
I was going to ask you about that.
Interesting one, yeah.
Are they not going with Nottinghamshire?
Well, I think that my understanding was that is what the ECB want them to do, is go with just the counties. But again, just from what I've read, it sounds like they want to keep the Blaze. So whether it's Nottinghamshire Blaze, who knows? I suppose a bit like Yorkshire Vikings is...
Yeah, I suppose. And Lancashire Thunder. Yeah, I suppose so.
So we'll see. Anyway, that's the least of our worries at the moment, because Nottinghamshire or Nottinghamshire Blaze have announced an additional contracted player. So they announced Kirsty Gordon, didn't they? And they've recently announced the Bryces, so Catherine and Sarah Bryce, and also Grace Ballinger, who's a good, young, exciting bowler. They've all got three-year contracts. How nice is that as a female professional cricketer to have a three-year contract?
100%. Having that security. I mean, I won't lie. I'm sure not all of them
yes.
will be three-year deals. There might be some twos and there might be some ones. But if you are a cricketer, like you're just saying about Paris, having that security and that safety, knowing that your next 3 years you're going to be in that one spot, I think that can only be a good thing for the women's game. I really do.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what other names follow, because, I mean, Surrey have been quick out the blocks, haven't
they? Have.
They've named another three players, Ailish Cranstone, Phoebe Franklin. I've written RMG, another one, Rhianna McDonald-Gay, who's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah.
But they're coming thick and fast, aren't they? And it'll be interesting to
we
see.
We will try and keep across
we
as
will.
Many of them as we can. We were hoping to get some live announcements on our YouTube channel from Durham. We don't
yes.
know, and there's no pressure on Durham, by the way. They don't have to, of course they don't. It would be quite good fun if they were to announce them on the Daggers and Lids podcast. We will keep you across whether they do or not. No pressure, Durham, but please do it, because it'd be really fun.
We get exclusive, our first exclusive.
That would be a great exclusive to have. And but it's in the works, it's in the pipeline, whether it happens or not. And I do say this with all sincerity. There is no pressure, Durham. You do not have to do this at all.
We look forward to chatting to you next week.
We will refer to them whenever they are signed. But like you say, I would imagine now counties are going to want to get those signings out there thick and fast, and I imagine agents are going at 10 to the dozen at this moment in time, because you want to scoop up as much talent as you possibly can. Not heard anything from Lancashire as yet.
That's a good point, actually. Maybe we can try and get a bit of insight from some of the chaps and chapesses there.
We might do, and of course Lancashire, if you want to announce your
signings
live on the Daggers and Lids podcast, feel free to get in touch. We're more than happy to provide a platform for you.
Absolutely. Right. I think that's all our regional stuff.
I think we're done there.
We have obviously got the New Zealand series coming up, which we're going to bring to you and bring a bit of a preview. That all kicks off on Wednesday the 26th of June at 1 p.m. at Chesterley Street. We will both be there, won't we?
We certainly shall.
Then
I'm not there.
You're not going to be there.
No. I'm going to be at Worcester. Okay. I'm going to Alicante for 4 days. Warm weather training.
They're training. Get down the gym, Daggers.
Yeah.
Down the cross trainer. And then we've got the 5T20 series. That all kicks off on the 6th of July at Southampton. Really good venues. It is all down south after that. So apologies to the people up north. I don't know. I'm apologising. We don't organise it, do we?
No, we don't.
But they're at home, Canterbury, Oval and Lords. And remember the last time that New Zealand and England played against each other, England won pretty convincingly 2-1 and 4-1 respectively.
Yeah.
So be interesting to see how that series plays out. The only other bit of news on that, sorry, Dad, because I'm waffling a bit here, but Leah Tahuhu is going to join the New Zealand squad just for the T20s, because I think they're going through the birth of their second child. Her and her wife Amy Satterthwaite, so all the best to them.
Absolutely, good luck to you guys.
That goes well. Right, we are on for the club spotlight.
Do you know what this was going to be a short and sharp podcast. We have an absolute inability to do both of those. How long have we done now?
I have no idea.
About 40 minutes, something like that. Hopefully you're enjoying it. Anyway, sorry, Liz, I interrupted.
Well, as our regular listeners will know, the thousands of you that listen to us each and every week, we do a club spotlight every week, and Daggers has been really good on promoting this and explaining to clubs what it's all about. And it's basically we want clubs who have got really good women and girls sections, whether you're really new or you've been going for a number of years. We want you to tell us what you've done, why you've been successful, and why you're just loving giving the opportunity to women and girls. And this week we have got Boyne Hill Cricket Club. Now, is that pronunciation right, Daggers?
I think it is.
Yes, let's go with that.
Yes.
And it was Jack Spencer-Jones who got in touch with you, Daggers.
JSJ, as we now call him.
JSJ, on our email, which is
daggersandlids@outlook.com. So if you want to get in touch, daggersandlids@outlook.com.
And Jack did exactly that. So he told us about their journey as a club. So they started pretty recently, actually, back in 2021.
Yep.
And the sense I got from it, Daggers, I don't know if you're the same, they were keen to just dip their toe in, just to see if they could do it well and if there was the I guess the feeling was reciprocated in terms of uptake. So the first year they offered some women's training, they put on two girls friendly matches, and they hosted a tournament. And after that first year, they felt it all went really well. And so they built on from there. So since then, they've run three girls tournaments where they've had 12 clubs enter it each year, which is just brilliant. They've grown to 60 girls in their junior section. They also have 20 adult women. The age range is from under nine all the way through to the senior women's team. And they also now host their all girls state schools and the all girls private schools for their matches, which I think for any club, if you can build a link with the local schools, it's so important, isn't it? Because it works both ways. You also get membership from the girls from the school, but the school gets to use your facilities as well.
I given obviously we know about the lack of cricket in state schools from a boys' perspective, but girls' cricket is growing in schools, both state and private schools, and obviously that stems from a variety of different things, especially with quick cricket or anything like that. Softball cricket is cheap. Yeah. It is relatively cheap. It's only when it goes to hardball does it get more expensive. But it gets the taste of cricket, going back to All-Stars, that clubs do so well. But the link, you hit the nail on the head. If a club can build a link with a local school, because playing fields were sold off, and providing wickets and providing grounds is not easy for a lot of schools, I hope that that link can continue to build throughout communities in the UK. And that is a great example at Boyne Hill. Not just state school. And that was the thing that excited me about this email from Jack. Is it was state schools as well as private schools. Yeah. And just young girls playing cricket is fantastic and what we want to see. Yeah. But, you know, build those links and get more people to use your ground. Because during the day, the majority of club grounds are not being used.
No, no.
Now, I understand that you need volunteers, you need someone to come down and make sure everything, you know, is open and all of that. And it's easier said than done. But most club training nights are either in the evenings or games nights are in the evenings. They're not during the day. If you can get a school down, use your club ground during the day, then does that not benefit everyone? And if they do like the sport, you've got then another member for your club.
Your membership numbers naturally increase.
Absolutely.
And I think the other thing that's been really good from Boyne Hill is that because of the work they've done, they have received funding for grants, and what they have had installed is a new Astro wicket, which, as you say, then saves a grounds person coming up and rolling 100%. The wicket. The school is there and ready to use, which is just brilliant. And so they're ambitious as well. So their aim for 2026 is to have 100 junior girls and 30 women playing both soft and hardball. And really nice that he finished in a way just to say what the sport has done for the new players at the club. He's just said it's become a second home with families becoming long-term friends, which I think is a nice way to finish off the club spotlight this week. And just to say a huge well done, really, to Boyne Hill and everyone down there, and obviously Jack and all the players involved, because it sounds like they're doing some really good things down there. So well done, you guys. I think that is it from us.
I think we're there.
We're done. So thank you, as ever, for listening to us waffle on. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. But we will be back next week with Katie Martin. I think she's just arrived from the World Cup. She's been out there commentating on that. So it'll be good to see what she has to say. But in the meantime, stay safe and we'll see you soon.